Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts today, Greta Anderson, here with my co-host, Gail Seiler. Hello, Gail.
Hello, Greta. Hello to you, our listeners. Thanks for joining us.
And while you're away, Gail, in New Orleans, more about that later, the Cyclones evidently won a game here in town, 38-13 against the Kansas Jayhawks.
I heard that. That's exciting for Cyclone fans.
And how was New Orleans?
It was, as always, a great place. There was great music and great food. I was at an educational conference there, so we were also interested in what's going on with the schools. They've made some sweeping changes in their schools, going to charter schools and using a lot of Teach for America teachers, but the schools are still struggling, and we had some interesting conversations with local people we met there about the schools.
And before you took off last week for this conference, you participated in a forum about issues of diversity and discrimination that stemmed from a confrontation at the Iowa State tailgater just 3 weeks ago. Another guest in the room is a young Mexican man who participated in that tailgate protest, who I later met with, and I feel his story is too compelling not to share with our Local Talk audience.
And finally, we have the Story County Emergency Services Director, Keith Morgan. He's going to look into his crystal ball.
Possibly even his snow globe.
And tell us what natural and unnatural disasters we should be prepared for in the coming months and how we can prepare for them.
So stay tuned for that. But first, Gail, why don't you set the scene for this meeting that occurred last Wednesday evening on the ISU campus?
The forum was called A Discussion on Racism, Diversity, and Inclusion and was held in the Great Hall in Memorial Union. About 800 people were in the audience. It was pretty much standing room only. I saw faculty and staff as well as students. KHOI was there to record it, and we're going to play some excerpts of it on Local Talk today. First, we're going to hear from Brian Lutz, the student moderator of the forum. He'll explain the context that inspired the forum. If our listeners are not familiar with what happened at the tailgate, the Cyhawk tailgate a few weeks ago, and why the forum was organized, this will help to explain it.
The context. On Saturday, September 12th, students from this institution began a silent, peaceful protest against racist comments that were made by the presidential candidate Donald Trump. In response, they were attacked both verbally and physically by the attendees, many of whom were students at Iowa State. Tabs from beer cans were thrown at them, as were racial slurs and other comments. These actions were captured on videos, which include insults directed towards the protesters and the destruction of one of their signs. These videos eventually captured the attention of several individuals on social media and reminded Latina and Latino students at Iowa State University of the crude reality of oppression within this campus and in the United States. In this way, a peaceful protest by ISU students was met with violence, and it is this violence that we are all here to address. In a written letter to our group, President Leith agreed that racial aggressions of this kind have no place on ISU's campus, and he offered his sympathies for what he felt were atypical acts from students of Iowa State. We appreciate this sentiment, and it is our experience that such aggressions, unfortunately, are too common, and that it will take more than sympathy to address them. But we want to recognize that the administration is committed to solutions, and that's why they are here in front of us. But throughout the nation, people are being discriminated against because of their skin color, their cultural background, sexual orientation, religious beliefs, immigration status, and so on. It is a national problem, a contemporary problem, which makes it our problem, even within an R1 institution. The events that took place on Saturday have inspired students against bigotry to take a stance against these actions in order to promote both a diverse and inclusive environment at this institution. Students Against Bigotry have joined forces for both racial and social justice on campus in order to establish a safe and secure environment for every student in Iowa State University.
That idea that the forum was needed for reasons that go well beyond the events at the Cyhawk tailgate was stated again and again throughout the forum. Latino students in particular, but other students of color as well as LGBTQ students, brought up the need for ISU to address ongoing racist and oppressive interactions, microaggressions, and feelings of being unwelcome and even unsafe on campus.
So how is this forum structured, Gail?
It was set up like this. There was an administrative panel and a student panel. The administrative panel consisted of ISU President Stephen Leith, Dean of Students Pamela Anthony, and Vice President of Student Affairs Tom Hill. ISU Police Chief Jerry Stewart was also there, and he responded to a few questions when called upon by President Leith. Throughout the discussion, it was clear that President Leith was taking the lead with the administrative panel and was the main spokesperson for them. And the student panel was composed of a number of students who were members of Students Against Bigotry, the group who organized the forum and the protest. These are students who are also leaders in various other organizations and groups on campus and included undergrad and grad students.
So it sounds like the events at the tailgater were just a starting point for a much larger discussion.
Absolutely. And that was the goal of the student organizers, that they, once the conversation started, several of the students described what happened at the tailgate and how fearful it made them, both at that moment and subsequently on campus. They expressed still feeling shock that the peaceful protest in response to Trump's anti-immigration comments and his presence at the football game was met with such hostility. But more common at the discussion at the forum was that the students on the panel and students in the audience, when it was opened up to the audience later, they did not talk about the protest. Instead, they spoke about the day-to-day bias, racism, and insensitivity that they experience as non-white students at ISU. So we'll hear a segment on that now.
Unfortunately, I do have to admit that my freshman year here was hell. My first experience at a personal injustice at ISU was my Halloween year here. My roommate at the time, it was a random roommate, decided it would be funny to dress up as a Mexican, knowing I'm Mexican-American. She bought the sombrero, the whole thing. She had even discussed with me buying a mustache. I didn't know how to respond. I didn't know, or I didn't want to believe this was happening. All I knew in that moment was that I was very uneasy, and I felt some type of way towards it. Of her idea of a funny costume. I have been asked, where are you from? As many have expressed here, to which I respond, Sioux City, Iowa. Born and raised, Sioux City, Iowa. They respond, no, where are you really from? What are you? This did not stop my freshman year. It has continued deep into my adventure at Iowa State. It's probably been the number one getting to know you question for most of us here. This number one question students of color are asked is just the tip of the iceberg, but nonetheless very hurtful. It is daily and random injustices that hit students out of literally nowhere. As a student leader, I have heard stories from freshmen of their friends saying, I don't care if you're Salvadorian, you're all Mexican to me. You're pretty for a black girl. You're pretty for a Mexican girl. Are you sure you're not half white? You have to be mixed. Hey, chink, would you like some rice? Instead of having us deal with this, why isn't this institution educating those who are privileged and blind to these issues? This is why I'm so devoted to multicultural groups on campus. Within all the clubs, organizations that I have been a part of, there is one central theme. These are the spaces where I feel safe on campus from all these daily microaggressions. These stories, these real and deeply traumatic experiences students of color face at Iowa State need to be shared. They need to be validated, not shoved aside as, you're being too emotional, or it was just a joke. And most importantly, these injustices need to be resolved.
Much of the student testimony was very emotional, as the segment that we just heard. After all the members of the student panel spoke about their personal experiences, this was followed by more from the student panel around three themes: safety, education, and empowerment. In this round, the students provided data to highlight injustice and oppression on campus, and they described specific needs and suggested possible solutions and responses that the administration might take. After each of the members of the student panel spoke in this round, the administrative panel was given the opportunity to talk back to them. Here's an example.
The words diversity and inclusion should not only apply to the student body, but to the faculty and staff at Iowa State as well. Diversity in faculty should not just apply to individuals in positions related to diversity and multiculturalism. The solution to this is simple. Hire more administrators, faculty, and staff who are people of color. A few facts. The highest ranking Latino is Dean of the College of Design. Central administration and academic administration is largely Latino-free, and there are no department chairs that are Latino. In addition to diversifying Iowa State faculty and staff, it needs to be ensured that current staff is comfortable and knowledgeable on topics related to race and privilege. This can be remedied by making the attendance of one session of I-SCORE, Iowa State Conference of Race and Ethnicity, mandatory for administrators, deans, faculty, and staff beginning this March. We also demand a safe zone training for racism, harassment, discrimination, and privilege, similar to the LGBTIQA safe zone training format.
Administrative panel, please respond.
First, I appreciate your comments, and I will try and be straightforward, and I don't want to overpromise and underdeliver. So to that end, I'll say that I am reluctant right now to mandate programs for our faculty without involving the faculty leadership. I think it's appropriate to go to the faculty senate. Right now we have a faculty that has a tremendously high workload with our growing population. It doesn't mean that these things aren't important or that they won't happen, but I don't want to sit here tonight and tell you exactly what we're going to implement without going to faculty senate, faculty leadership.
In most cases, President Leith responded by asking them to send him the data they were citing and to send him their lists of requests and suggestions. In at least one case, he actually questioned the data they were providing. There were a few instances in which he committed to doing something specific. One of those was increasing the diversity seen in the public art at ISU, that is, choosing artists and pieces of art that better represent the racial and ethnic makeup of the campus. But again, in most cases, as in the segment we just heard, President Leith said he would take their ideas under consideration while noting that there are limited resources available for certain kinds of changes, such as the suggestion that the students made for improved community centers or spaces for Black or Latino students to gather and come together.
And so was there an opportunity for the audience to get involved? How did the audience respond to this exchange?
After about an hour of this, it was quite lengthy, over an hour, then there was time for audience questions or comments. During the audience part of the forum, many of the questions and comments ranged away from the subject of race and into other areas, such as discrimination against LGBTQ students or free speech rights. But a graduate student brought the discussion back to race, and specifically back to President Leith's response to the tailgate events.
After the event that took place on September 12th, you provided a statement, and I just want to share my reaction with that. You said that they were derogatory comments, and we don't accept that here, and you were really sending that message. And I also found myself wondering why there was no mention of race in that statement, and in thinking that I gave the benefit of the doubt that maybe it was a diplomatic decision. And being here today and hearing encouragement, minorities should speak up. I just wonder if the president of an R1 university doesn't feel comfortable to speak up about race in an open statement, then how can the students speak up for themselves? And this is not meant to be said critically. Rather, it just leads to a suggestion of action that could be done that could have an incredible ripple effect for minorities and among people who are in the majority would be for you to come out and say, there was a racial event, there are racist events that occur every day here at Iowa State, and it's not okay. And as the president of the university, I won't stand for it.
I appreciate that comment because it gives me a chance to put some perspective. Unfortunately, I tend to be somewhat race blind, and I go everywhere and try and treat everybody the same. So, you know, I go to Latino graduations, I go to ISCOR, I flew to Texas to be the keynote speaker at the Latinos in Agriculture. I probably need to put it more at the front of my mind. One thing that's opened my eyes tonight is that this is a bigger, more significant problem than I perceived it to be here. You know, when I meet people on the street, I was with a former student of mine who was in our president's leadership class the other day, and I was talking to her about the issues. It took me a minute to realize that she was Latino, because I don't always think of that. And probably there's some advantage of treating people equally, but there's probably a disadvantage that's becoming more and more apparent tonight, that when you do that, it's good in a way, but you don't, you're not as sensitive to the way they're seeing life. So, and I've got to realize that not everybody treats people perhaps the way me and my wife treat people. So, to that end, that probably would have been an appropriate thing to do. In that particular case, there was probably some sexism issues too that could have been addressed. I promise you, from tonight forward, I will try to still treat people equally and fairly and individually, because we're all diverse in some ways, but I will definitely be more sensitive to the way many of you perceive the world and encounter the world as compared to I do. So appreciate the opportunity to say that.
That was President Leith responding to a student's comment from the audience on the lack of reference to race or racism in the formal statement that he issued following the attacks on the protesters at the Cyhawk tailgate. His response to that comment really sums up many of the administrative panel's responses at the forum. In other words, they seem to be saying, we didn't know. We didn't know it was this bad. We didn't know these kinds of things were happening. But what people I've talked to since the forum are still wondering is, isn't it his responsibility to know these kinds of things and to use his power and position to get that knowledge?
It sounds like the students who brought these complaints to the forum that was held last Wednesday now at least have the satisfaction that this excuse by administrators of not knowing can no longer be used. These students' achievement in obtaining a forum with top administration officials in just a short 3 weeks strikes me as really remarkable.
Yeah, that's true. A great deal of organizing and planning occurred very quickly, and they had help from many more people behind the scenes that they also thanked for being involved, including other students and faculty members. But I believe there's still a bit of frustration among them, well, a lot of frustration, that it falls on the students of color themselves to be the ones to bring these issues to the fore and explain the issues to the administration.
Well, thank you, Gail, for your reporting on that. Of course, not all people can speak their truth so openly, but as more do, more can. And this brings us to our next guest. He made a long journey to get to central Iowa from central Mexico, and this will be practically the first time he has told his story. We will call him Juan, although that is not his real name. He wants to remain anonymous, not because he is here illegally. That is not the case. But he wants to avoid trouble in his community and at the high school he attends. So, Juan, if you'd like to say hello to the listeners.
Hello, my name is Juan, and thank you for listening to my story.
So, Juan, growing up, had a reasonably comfortable life in central Mexico, west near Mexico City, the youngest of several siblings. And we are going to be sharing the narration of his story, since it's a long one and with a lot of detail. Both of his parents had jobs. His father worked on a ranch. His mother ran a store. Then they suffered an incident of robbery and extortion that kind of devastated their family finances. So Juan could not continue his education. And so can you explain what happened next?
Absolutely. Well, after that, I finished my high school. One day I went to Mexico City because my family don't have money to buy nothing for me. Well, during 2 years, when I was in high school, I was working after school and also in my weekends, and I was buying everything for my high school. And When I get done my high school, I wanted to go to college, but I cannot because my family cannot pay for me. And also, I was smart in Mexico. I get good grades, but the government from Mexico cannot help me with scholarships. So it was terrible. So one day I decided to go to Mexico City and get a visa. So I told to my father, I'm going to Mexico City and just to spend time in Mexico DF because I think that he was sad about me. He wanted to help me. He wanted to help me to continue my education, but he cannot. He was absolutely poor, so it was.
So you went to Mexico City,
yes,
without telling your parents, your family,
yes,
with the idea of trying to get a visa to,
yes,
come to the United States to work,
yes,
for your opportunities and to help your family as,
yes,
well.
And so you obtained that visa and were legally allowed in the U.S. You landed in Houston, Texas, and got a job in construction, from what you told me.
Yes. When I went to Mexico City, after like 1 month after that, I came to Texas. I was very sad because my family was devastated because we was together all the time. So when I came to here, just with myself, no family, no nothing, it was bad. When I came to Texas, I got a cousin in Texas. But I was living with him for just 1 or 2 days, and I don't remember it. So we're very good. But then he went to New Mexico, so I was just in Texas.
Your cousin left, and you were,
yes,
alone.
And I was in Texas, so I was looking for a job, and I found a job in construction. One person give me a job, and because I didn't have car, no money, no nothing, so he was driving me all the time from my apartment to my job. When I was in my job, he was not very nice with me. He all the time pushed me for everywhere. He was angry with me all the time, and also he said me bad words all the time. And, he was not a very nice person. And also, he paid me just $15 for a week. And I was working all the time, all the day. I was working, I begin my work at 5 a.m. And I was done with my work at 11 or 12 or sometimes 1 a.m., so I was working all day, and sometimes I had no food, no nothing, no water, and it was very hot in Texas. So many days I get sick because my body don't have water, so it was very sad. So,
and you were how old at this time?
Excuse me?
How old were you at this time?
18.
18. So he was basically paying for your apartment and then giving you $15.
Yes. I was paying for my apartment, but just for my apartment. Just I was asking for food all the time because I didn't have money to buy my apartment and food. So
okay.
Yeah.
So what happened? That doesn't sound like a very sustainable situation. You can't keep that up for very long. What happened next then? You decided to quit the job.
Yes. One day, I remember it. It was raining, and this person was very, very angry with me because I made an error in my job. So he was very angry, and he pushed me, and he was fighting with me. and I was bleeding from my nose and many parts of my body. So I was tired to this situation. So I pushed him, and he fell off the ground. So then he woke up, and he said he will be back. He took his truck, and he said, "I will be back with a gun, and I will kill you." So I was very, very scared, and I began to walk in the city in Houston. I was walking for 6 days. During 6 days, I was walking, just walking in the city. I was sleeping in the street. No food, no water, no money, no phone, no nothing. It was terrible. I was thinking that, I don't know, I was thinking that I can die in whatever moment. I was very sad, very, very sad, missing my family. No call to my family. During 3 months, I never called to my family. It was very sad for me. I missed my family so much, and it was terrible. Just I was eating whatever thing that I found in the street. I was asking for food to the persons. Sometimes I asked for food in a restaurant or in a house or whatever, and nobody helped me. Nobody helped me because they said, "Oh, you are like, I don't know, just nothing helped me. Just take your way again." No, yeah. So
Houston being such a large city, and you not really knowing your way around.
Yeah, it was my first time in Houston, Texas, so I never know about this very big city.
Right.
So yeah, and I was lost because I don't know whether. Where was my apartment.
Right.
So I was loose for 6 days.
But you finally found a neighborhood you recognized, and it was...
Well, I was walking, and then I recognized, how do you say this word?
Recognized?
Yes, one store. So after that, I was, happy because I was thinking that this store was close to my apartment. So I went to my apartment, and when I came to my apartment, I was just happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're talking with a young man. We're calling him Juan. He's has an experience of being an immigrant in the United States, being a legal immigrant here on a work visa, and now he's in central Iowa. Talk about you decided to come to central Iowa. We're going to skip the part about you being barricaded in your apartment. You came to Central Iowa because you have some other relatives here, some cousins, and you were able to enroll in a local school. So can you talk about the difference, what you've experienced in Central Iowa compared to your time in Texas?
Yes. After these problems in Texas, I was living in Texas for 3 months, and then I decided to came to Iowa because I had family here in Iowa. So I came to here, and I began to work because I didn't have money, nothing. So I began to work in construction, and when I was working in construction, I get an accident in construction, so I hurt my eye, and I was scared because I didn't see anything for many days. My eye was bleeding, and it was very big eye. So
Did you receive any treatment for that?
No, nothing. Just when I was working, boss, he said, just go and clean your eye with water because my eye was very weak. So he never said I can bring you to the hospital or something like that. He never said that. So then one day I know about one very nice person. She's a teacher, and she said, she sent me to clinic because my eye was terrible. So I went to the clinic, and in this clinic, one doctor said to me that I needed to get a surgery in my eye, because if you don't get a surgery in my eye, in the next 3 days you will lose your eye. You will not see anything for all your life, so you need to get a surgery. And I was so scared because I didn't have money or nothing, so I was scared. And then when I was in this situation, I know about other person that she was helping me all the time. Yeah. She said, "I will pay for you. I will help you whatever you wanted." And also when I went to Des Moines to the hospital, I know about one doctor that I was talking with him about my story, and he said to me, "I will do the surgery for you free, so you don't need to buy anything for me. All this will be free for you." And after that, this teacher said me that I can go to high school. So I was happy because again I found new opportunities for my life. So
now you're going to high school and you still have a construction job. I don't know, is it the same one?
Yes.
Boss. And you have a construction job on the weekends, a restaurant job during the work days. Tell us a little bit about your schedule of work.
Well, my life now is very busy. I am studying during the mornings. I am going to high school, and in the nights I am going to work in a restaurant. So I am done with the job in the night, and then on Saturdays, I am working in construction during the mornings, and in the nights I am working in the restaurant again, and Sundays I am working all day in the restaurant. So it's a very busy schedule.
Mm-hmm. And you've been able to save some money. You pay for your own apartment.
Yes, I am paying for my apartment. I am paying for everything, food, for everything. So,
why don't you tell the listeners what your goal is?
My goal in the life, and also because I came to here, is because I really want to go to college. I really want to get a very good education. Just I wanna have a good future and give a good future also for my family. Just I want a good future. Just I wanna find good opportunities and fight for my good opportunities. Just I want that. I know that it is very hard. I know that, and I know because many things was happening with me. So I know that it is very hard, but just I want to find a good future. I want to go to college and just fight for a good future.
And so I gather that you see that you feel that there's a lot more opportunities for free schooling, and you were able to get medical care, and there's maybe more job opportunities here in the U.S. But there are some things that are negative about the U.S. or that you find you don't like about the U.S. Could you talk about those a bit?
Well, I really want to say thank you. Thank you very much, U.S., because this country is helping us all the time, helping the Hispanic persons all the time. But, yeah, I have, with very respect, but I have little things that I don't like it about this country. Because sometimes persons think that just we are bad persons. And it is not true.
We being Hispanic people.
Yeah, or the Hispanic Mexican.
Well, not just Hispanic. Well, not just Mexican people. I mean, like, Hispanic persons. So they are, like, racist sometimes with these Hispanic persons. And I don't like that because I think that everybody needs respect. And just I want that you know that just we are looking for good opportunities. We don't, we are not bad persons. We are not like criminals or something like that. We are just looking for good opportunities for us families. Just we are fighting for us families.
And just to bring this full circle, you showed up at that tailgate protest on September 12th against one of the candidates and the racist things that he was saying.
Yes. Just want to say that just we are looking for a good opportunities. We are not bad persons. Just, we don't, well, I don't know how you say it. Just we are looking for good opportunities. I'm sorry.
So. It's fine. Thank you so much for sharing your story and sharing your life with us here in the United States.
Thank you.
We're lucky to have you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I want to say that I'm sorry for my English. I am learning English right now, so it's not perfect. But I want to tell you one final thing, that the more hard thing that when you are here is that you don't have your family. It is the most sad thing that you never feel in your life. It's the most sad thing. So please just think about that. That I don't know how do you say this word in English, but all the time just we are fighting for us family, and maybe it is, well, just it is the most sad thing in the life, that you don't have your family, you don't have your mother, you don't have your father, you cannot give a hug for your father, you cannot hear a word for your father and say everything will be okay, you don't have nothing about that, so
and
it's a very hard thing.
You've protected your family from some of the things that you've gone through. You have not told them.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah.
So we need to extend compassion and be the family that you don't have for now.
Yeah, coming so early, so young, too, must be very difficult to be. It's always difficult to be away from family, but to endure those kinds of experiences and to be so young and to not have your family support must be very challenging. You're a brave person, and I hope
you are
successful in school and meet some of your goals, and welcome to our community.
Thank you very much. I hope so.
Okay, that was a 19-year-old student from Mexico who was here legally in the United States from Mexico who chose to remain anonymous but wanted to tell his story to change the perception of immigrants. After this break, we'll hear from Keith Morgan, the Director of Emergency Services of Story County. Welcome back to the show. That was Leon Russell and the Shelter People, and you are listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Before the break, we heard two stories about some of the changes that occur when people find the courage to speak up. And by the way, that sign that was ripped at the tailgater that started this whole thing says, "Our lives begin to end the day we become silent about the things that matter." And I just want to put a plug in here for the role of community radio in our community to involve everyone in the conversation and bring them out of the silence.
And KHOI takes that role seriously. And next, we'd like to welcome to the show Keith Morgan of Story County Emergency Services, a department of the county government. Welcome, Keith.
Good morning.
And Keith is here to help us calamity-proof our lives and our homes to the extent that is possible. Right, Keith?
Oh, exactly. Craig Fugate says that he's changed his perspective on disasters, and he wants us all to start thinking of ourselves not as victims but survivors, that we've taken care of ourselves as much as possible and that we're ready to act when the time comes.
Okay, and this is a seasonal thing. You're going to be here next month?
I come monthly, so, we're going to grab this early time to start talking about the upcoming winter, because some of the stuff that I'm going to be talking about is already starting to happen and folks need to be thinking about it.
Okay. Just so you don't mention Christmas trees. That's the basic rule here.
I'll take that rule and I'll run with that one.
Okay. So this is the season of fall, falling leaves. Usually it's dry, but it's kind of wet out right now. It has been. What do we need to think about?
Well, some of the stuff, we'll kind of start from the outside of your house and move on in into the inside of your house. Some of us might be thinking about raking up leaves and having a little bit of a bonfire. And if that's permissible, especially if you live in a city, if that's permissible with the ordinances within your city, just ask folks to be safe while they're doing that. If they're going to have a fire, they need to be by that fire. They need to have some sort of a water source, because these embers can fly. It is drying out a little bit, and they can start a fire, maybe not in your yard, but maybe in your neighbor's yard. So it's important to be a good neighbor, to stay by your fire, make sure that you've cleared the area around and that you have a water source just in case it might get a little bit away from where you had it at.
So whether or not you can do a bonfire to burn leaves depends on where you live, so people need to check out those local ordinances. Is that correct?
Definitely. It's different from town to town, and you need to check your local ordinances to see what's permissible, when it's permissible. That way you won't run afoul of the law enforcement.
And I noticed in Ames, people burn brush, branches, and so on in their fire pits, but they're doing it to get rid of the brush. Is that the same cautions, obviously, but is that allowed in some places but not in others as well, or is a fire pit different?
And that would you'd have to check your own ordinances for each. If you have any questions, call your fire fire chief for your district. Probably the best place to start with.
Okay.
Yeah, I always check the wind, and I always try to, if I'm going to light a fire, make sure there might be rain on the way. That's always the best time, I think.
That's a good time. Like you said, the wind, if it's difficult getting the match started to start the fire, then it's probably a little bit too windy to be having that fire.
Okay. And then you said you're going to work outward and then in toward the house.
Sure.
What's next?
If you live in an older house, walk outside. Look above the power lines that are coming into your house. And if there are any branches up above that power line, imagine about an inch of ice on that and imagine what that would do to your power line. That's why I'm saying start now, because it's going to take you a while to get a tree trimmer in there to take care of that. So start looking to make sure that you don't have that. And the other thing is, these new high-efficiency furnaces are now vented out the side of your house. Make sure that the area where that's going to vent to is clear so that the CO2 doesn't come back into your house and create a hazard for yourself.
That is true. That happened to me one day. Thankfully, I had my carbon dioxide or carbon monoxide detector, and suddenly all these voices were talking to me. Oh, you've got carbon monoxide. I was shocked. I didn't know what was going on, and finally figured out that, yeah, it was a new furnace we'd put in. It was venting out the side, and there was a huge drift of snow blocking that thing. So we had to just dig it out, and everything went well from there.
What a great straight person, because that's one of the things that I was going to talk about is having a CO2 detector. My aunt and uncle also ran into problems because of CO2. They're cheap. They're easy.
Wasn't it CO, carbon monoxide?
That's correct.
Okay.
CO, carbon monoxide, byproduct of the burning. Right. And a lot of people don't realize how often that becomes a hazard. You might feel sick. It's wintertime. You think you got the flu when actually you're slowly being poisoned by the CO that's occurring there. So get one. Make sure that it's got a battery backup. And the fire your smoke detectors, fire detectors are the other thing, because we're moving inside and a lot of people are going to start using alternate heating sources. And you have to be very, very careful with those. If they're electric, make sure they have a tip-over function on them, that they're monitored, that you don't have anything close to them whatsoever while you're using them. And people are going to start using their fireplaces now. Have you had, especially if you've got a true wood-burning fireplace, when was the last time you had your chimney checked and cleaned to make sure it's not blocked first off, and to secondly make sure that it's cleaned out and it's not going to be a fire hazard? So it's these little things that we need to start doing now before we really start getting into the wintertime that are important.
Okay.
So we've got cautions when you burn leaves and branches. Check your power lines for branches nearby and get those trimmed. Check your furnace ventilation now and all winter, you're saying?
All winter long, yes.
Okay. And have your fireplace chimney checked.
Exactly. Those are some of the things, and these are the things that we see on TV. There is one more thing that folks really have to watch out for. Should you have a problem with your furnace and you're tempted to bring that grill inside and just kind of rub your hands over top of it, don't do that, because, again, the carbon monoxide will build up and it can cause either injury or death.
And now that it's getting cold-ish, people might not want to turn on their full furnace yet, so they may be relying on space heaters. Maybe it's just cool in the room they're working in. Are there certain kinds of space heaters that are safer than others?
Well, there are features within the space heaters that are important. The most important one is a tip over. If it gets tipped over, it'll automatically turn off. And, you know, even if you're thinking about it, the dog comes by, bumps into it, and knocks it over. If you don't have that feature, very rapidly you can have a pretty significant fire.
Is that a feature that sort of has come into production, like, in the last few years? If you have a heater past a certain age, and it might not have that function?
Definitely. And also look at the grating that's on the front of it. Does it look like something could get in there? Check the wires. See if they're frayed. If the wires are getting extremely hot while you're using it, then you probably need to get a different one because it's pulling too much power. But those are the basic things that you need to look at.
And are those – I think they're called radiant heaters. Are they safer than – like pure electrical heaters, or?
You know, I haven't studied those that much. The main ones that I'm familiar with are the heater element ones, the ones that glow red on
them.
And I haven't read anything whether those are safer or not. Again, even if you're using those, you have to check your electrical connections to them. Do not plug them into an extension cord. These heaters take a lot of power, and you can overheat your extension cord pretty quickly.
Okay, I did not know that. And I always wonder, as we get our heat going, about drapes. Can curtains and drapes really catch on fire from being near heating elements? What kind of danger is that really?
Drapes, definitely. If you've ever seen the videos of when those catch fire and how it'll just climb up the drapes, it's definitely an issue. And that's why we say make sure that the area completely around it is clear of anything that could get in there and touch that element. And a drape blowing back and forth could easily get in there.
Okay.
Do you have any other pointers for us this season?
Well, you're probably not going to stay in your house all winter long. So, you know, it's once you leave that house and you're going to get in your car, it's time to start thinking about what you're going to do, starting from the outside, working your way on in. The first thing is, if it's snowing out and it's miserable out, do you really need to get out there? Is it really worth your life when we have these blizzards going on for you to get out there and travel. And that's the thing I ask people to think about first when they're looking at it. You can check the road conditions. There's 511, which is the state road conditions. And on the Story County website, there's secondary roads also has a list of roads that are closed. Go and check that to make sure that you don't run into a blocked road. Another important thing is make sure you've got a fully charged cell phone battery, because that cell phone is going to be your connection to somebody coming out and rescue you if you ever do get in there. And start off with a half tank of gas. You don't want to be walking through the snow because you thought you could get a little bit further on that eighth of tank that you had. And if you do get stuck, that gas is going to be your warmth over the long term. So make sure that you have plenty of that as you're going. A survival kit in the car is absolutely imperative to make sure you have some extra warm clothing, maybe a candle to help heat the interior of the car. That's very, very important. And, you know, a lot of people let people know where you're going to. In the flying world, they call it a flight plan. We'll make it a driving plan. Hey, Mom, I'm coming to visit you. I'm driving down S-14 to get on over to you, and I'm leaving. If you don't show up on the other side, then she knows to send somebody out to look for you and where to look for you. Because if you've been injured when you ran off the road, that also could be something very, very important.
So that gets us into winter driving.
That's
so appeared. And you come back each month. Is that right? So you'll update us on more winter cautions and so on as we progress through the seasons.
Definitely. And any other events that might be coming up.
Okay.
Well, I really love the idea of putting together a kit, you know, a kit for your car of survival gear, maybe just some dry clothes because, you know, that story, Jack London, about the fire. I can't remember the name of it, but the whole problem, this person couldn't survive because they got wet.
The wet, yeah.
That was it.
Yeah. Exactly. And, you know, we were talking about the risk of carbon monoxide. When I was going to college, we lost two of our students because they got stranded in the snow and did not continue to clear the tailpipe as they were running their vehicle. They were out in the middle of Kansas, and they succumbed to carbon monoxide
because
they were running the engine,
the
and the exhaust couldn't get out the tailpipe. So things like that you have to watch out for. Again, a little bit of good common sense can go a long ways.
Okay. Well, we still hope it will be a while before the snow flies, but we'll hope the snow has not flown yet by the time we see you again, Keith Morgan.
I hope so, too.
Okay. Thanks for coming in.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. We've been your hosts, Greta Anderson and Gail Seiler. We started out the show with reporting from Wednesday evening's Campus Forum on Race and Diversity. Right. We then heard from a local teenager who is from Mexico and has a very full work schedule and very full life and is working to make his way back to Mexico and go to college there. Finally, we were joined by Keith Morgan of the Emergency Services Division of Story County.
Local Talk will be rebroadcast at noon and 7 p.m. today, and you can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. There, you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories. And you can like us on Facebook and get updates on all of our show postings in your news feed. Thanks to webmaster Ron Carson for making that possible.
Local Talk was engineered by Jonah DeGeest and Nadia Abdelazim. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was Leon Russell and The Shelter People.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878. That's 292-2878. Or contact us through our website, khoifm.org.
If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.